Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Hey, Char, thanks for being here, bud. I love connecting with you on a call. You're helping coach one of my other companies, one of my key people there. But as we got to hang out together, your experience and what you now bring to your coaching and development company was something that I was like, man, I want to hang around this guy, but I also want our audience to learn from you. So if you can give us kind of a high level background of your journey, and I want to kind of dive into your experience when it comes to like the results oriented coaching, I think it'll be fun to do that.
Stan, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here with you and your audience. Yeah, I loved hanging out with you and chatting with you. I'd be more than happy to share some of the things I've learned along my quite long journey now. So I was born and raised in southern New Mexico, and part of my early childhood was really challenging. And it's part of my story and why I do what I do. So my dad had his first stroke when I was 18 months of age. And at 9 years old, I found him passed away in the backyard, and he had died. And I didn't even know he was my dad during any of this time. My mom didn't tell me he was my father until after he passed away. She wanted to protect me, I guess, whatever her reasoning was. And in that time, another guy came in my life and had two brothers from him. He left my mom alcoholic. Long story short, my home was dysfunctional, alcoholic, abusive my entire life, all kinds of men in and out. Left a huge hole in my life, and I wanted to fill that hole with money. That's what I thought would. I grew up pretty poor. I was called white trash and trailer trash most of my childhood. And kids like you don't amount to much, and you can be a ditch digger, join the military, that kind of mindset. And I knew I wanted to get out of that, so I joined the military. Obviously, that upbringing left huge insecurities and lack of identity and all that. And I wanted to fill it with achievement. I thought achievement would be the way to fill it. I was pretty good at computer programming. I was going to be a coder. And anyway, I met a captain in the Air Force, John Simmons, who changed my life forever. He told me to take that pain and make something useful out of it. Don't just be successful, be useful. I've embraced that my entire life. So at age 28, started my first company, and we grew it from scratch to quite large. And when I retired a few years ago, we had 200 staff working in 5 countries around the world, doing all kinds of really cool project orphanages and water projects and hygiene projects here in the States, after school programs and drug and alcohol rehab centers. Obviously, alcoholism was a big part of my childhood. So, you know, helping people out of addiction and broken marriages and families. So my story is I've tried to take the pain of my early childhood and turn it into something useful. And now I get to spend all my days investing in young leaders like you. And that's an honor.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, man. I remember, yeah, when we first talked about it, I felt the heaviness of that. Our stories overlap to some degree on some of that. And
right.
And I've got feedback from people before where they're like, yes, Stan, but that's part of the reason you're successful is because you had to overcome this. And I even had to wrestle with, like, so does that mean that other people don't get success if they didn't have as much trauma or their trauma looked different? I'm thankful to hear that you had somebody at some point that kind of like spoke into your life. Did you have multiple people do that and it just didn't take until this one person, or what was different about that one guy you mentioned?
So I could point out Bill Streeter, 8th grade science teacher who became a Boy Scout leader, pretty instrumental at a time in my life where that was the first time I had any kind of moral code, you know, the Boy Scout, you know, code of conduct. That was the first time I had any kind of framework like that. And I really gravitated toward that because my house was so chaotic and dysfunctional. So I could point to Bill Streeter in 8th grade, and that Boy Scout experience was wonderful. I could point to Vince Collins, my receiver coach in high school, and just the interest he took in me and wanted me to succeed. So there were other men in my life that had some positive nuggets here and there. But John came in at a time where, you know, I'm kind of an adult now. I'm 18, 19 and on my own and out of my family and just starting to make my own way. And he invited me into his home and I got to eat dinner with his family and watch him, how he interacted with his wife and parented his kids. And and I just saw a different view of manhood than I'd ever experienced. And that was at that time in my life. It was like, I could actually do something with my life other than just make money. I could do something useful. Mm-hmm. And it was just a perfect time in my life to receive that message.
When you, as I kind of look back, and I'm, I think unpacking your story and understanding it's probably a lifelong pursuit, but as I've been able to get healthy enough to kind of reflect and own stuff and see it for what it kind of more was versus what I thought it to be, my story had a lot of opportunities for excuses, of which I used most of them for a long time. I wasn't successful because I didn't have a mentor. I had anger issues in sports because nobody ever kind of taught me. How have you handled that over time? Where like there's this chip, this story will never go away. There's some part of it that can become a superpower. But early on, at least for me, it was more of a hurdle. The excuses were so many to count. What would you tell somebody now that like there's a lot of reasons they could not be successful, but those reasons are kind of winning still?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I struggle with anger and insecurity, all the stuff, right? I dealt with that. I ran away from the addiction side of it pretty easily and quickly. I never struggled with that I saw so much. My brothers fell into that. I'm the only one that escaped, if you will. Two of my three younger brothers have already passed on and from some of that stuff. So I ran away from some of it, but the internal stuff of anger and insecurity and imposter syndrome and never measuring up, definitely had to wrestle with those. So one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got was a combination of what John was kind of teaching me and then this little book that I read. Andy Andrews wrote a book called The Traveler's Gift. Or he meets, I don't know if you've heard of that book. Most great people book, haven't. Okay, you've read it. Yeah. So in this travel after he has his accident, he meets Harry Truman and he talks about personal responsibility. And he was blaming everybody and everything and job and economy. And this message came through. You've chosen your way here, like all of your choice. You chose who to be married to. You chose your job. You chose everything led you to this point. And this was the deal that hit me hard. And I teach this everywhere I go. If you chose your way here, you can choose your way out. Mm. So like you, I could have said, I didn't pick my family. I didn't pick alcoholism. I didn't pick all the crap that I was handing my childhood. Mm-hmm. But you can choose your way forward. And that message just resonated with me. And so I began to just simply not accept any excuses. And as much as that message just punched me in the face, was like, wait a second, I didn't choose that most of this crap. I realized that the bulk of the responsibility for my way forward is on me. And so all the coaching I do, all the counseling I've done with addicts who want to blame everybody else, it doesn't fly. It just, you know, you're an adult now. You choose your way forward from this point on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody listening right now, like your story is unique. I think the struggles that come out of it are not fully unique. I think that's something like we share the struggle, and there's less loneliness in that. I've learned that it's like, I'm not in this island in this bubble where it's only me. No one understands fully. I may not fully get your story and I wasn't there living it with you.
Yeah.
But I think there's hope in the idea of like, I do have some control here though, that I'm not helpless. There's also some ownership in that, which can be heavy when like, if I do believe what you just said, now it's on me. And how do I handle the pressure and responsibility of like, wow, if this doesn't work out, it is actually my fault now versus all the other things that I've kind of been able to blame to some degree.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the details of my story may be a bit unique. The general the general truth is all of us are fighting a battle of some sort. Every one of us, every one of your listeners, if I had the privilege of sitting down and chatting with each one of them one by one, every one of them is fighting something. And for me, that's not disheartening. That's unifying. Like we can all kind of be in this together, give grace to each other, realize that no matter the mask we put on, everyone's fighting something. So let's come back to the autonomy or responsibility mindset. And that is, yes, it can be heavy that it is up to me once I understand that it's up to me going forward. But there is such freedom in knowing that if I chose my way here, I can choose my way there, meaning I don't have to be a victim anymore of what other people do or say. I get to respond how I want. I get to act how I get to speak how I want. I get to determine whether I continue to work here or work with this person or whatever. Mm-hmm. For me, there was great freedom in that, even though there was the heaviness of responsibility. I prefer the heaviness of that responsibility over the victim mindset that I don't have any control, because that's just a lie.
Yeah. For me, it was helpful, but the God gave me a logical mind, which in some parts of my life is a superpower, helps in finance, helps with financial planning, all the things. But it was really hard for me to hold two things at once. It had to be one or the other. That like nuance is true. Like your story, the things you're facing daily are yours. There's also these truths that we can hold to some degree that we all face, that, if you work hard, most likely the outcome will be better. You can actually work less hard and more efficient and probably get a better outcome faster.
Sure.
And as I learned to hold both of those things, it's encouraging to, there's structure and there's a path, but it doesn't mean we all have to stay on the same one. And in our languages we use, there's an average path and there's an elite path, that as we coach advisors, there's a weight of knowing it's my responsibility to be successful, but also a relief in like, I'm not the first one to do it. And there's frameworks and paths that have probably been created by other people that have been willing to take that time.
Yeah.
And at some point in your story, you shifted to being kind of a map maker.
Yep.
What was that shift from like, hey, I'm doing this stuff to prove myself wrong, to build the confidence, to, hey, now I think I'm qualified enough and have enough humility and confidence at the same time to now teach others?
There is so much to unpack there. Oh my goodness. So the two sides to what your question is how did you overcome some of that early programming to chart my own way? So that entrepreneur mindset. So we can unpack that first. And then how did I become, in your words, a map maker for others? Mm-hmm. So let's go to the entrepreneur mindset first. So part of that comes from the broken side, the shadow side, where I don't want to be told what to do anymore. I was told what to do my entire life. So then you have what I call dark drivers, all the CEOs I work with. We all have to unpack our own dark drivers. So one of my dark drivers is, no one's going to tell me what to do, so I'm going to chart my own path. Even if it's stupid, I'm going to beat my head against the wall. I'd rather beat my head against the wall than you tell me what to do. So there's some of that rebellion, defiance that comes out of pain, right?
Yep.
And I had to work through that and develop a more healthy mindset around that entrepreneur mindset. It's not just to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
The naysayers, the haters, not just to prove them wrong. It can't be that anymore. It has to be. And what has transitioned to me is I've truly become curious about what I'm capable of. So I'm driven far more by curiosity than rebellion anymore in my more mature years. And I coach from that as well. Like, Stan, I'm curious about what you're capable of, in our relationship. All of my clients, I'm curious about what they can achieve. So it's that which began as rebellion and defiance has morphed into a healthy curiosity and passion for just improving my own life and others. So, okay. So that's how I charted my own path through the jungle. And then let's talk about the map maker deal. Well, I simply gravitate to the kind of person who is hacking their way through their own jungle. Entrepreneurs. I gravitate to people who want to create something good for themselves and other people. They're my people. They're my tribe. Mm. So I gravitate toward those people. The wonderful people who don't mind sitting back and working on the front lines and taking direction. Wonderful, beautiful human beings. I just don't gravitate toward that mindset. I gravitate toward people who create and energize and invest in others. As good people have invested in me, I want to pay it forward and invest, like I said, in young people and leaders like yourself. So that's motivated by A, I'm attracted to that mindset, and B, I want to leave the world a better place than I found it. And that's going to be through impacting leaders. So I get to impact leaders every day of my life.
Do you feel kind of worthy of that at this point? Is it what they, how heavy is the imposter syndrome now, given your story?
Yeah, right. That's a third part of that question. Early on, when I was really young, you know, 28, starting my first company, and I've said for years, I'm completely unemployable. I'm 100% unemployable.
Nice. So, you had no other choice. You had to, you had to.
I just can't. I'm just not wired to work for other people.
Yeah.
So 28, starting my first company, huge imposter syndrome. Who the heck do I think I am that I'm going to build something and organize things and give people instruction and direction? And I begin to speak on stages. I've given about 4,000 talks to about 400,000 people around the world. And early on, I was like, what do I mean, look where I come from. Who's going to listen to this kid, this trailer trash, white trash, New Mexico desert rat? Who's going to listen to that kid? Mm-hmm. So I absolutely had to wrestle with that. But then the data of success, the data of impact, the track record of my own transformation and the impact I had on other people, the overwhelming evidence begins to displace that mindset of inferiority. And you know, now I've been, you know, I'm old now, I've been doing this a long time. So there's a long track record of data. So when that imposter syndrome comes up at every next level, it doesn't matter what level you're at, the next level, that dude or dudette is going to show up and say, I don't know if you can play at this level.
Yeah.
I look back at, you know, what it's now 30 years of track record. Okay. If I did that, and that, I can definitely give this a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. As I hear you talk about some of this stuff, like the dark driver that jumped out to me, the imposter syndrome, part of what I try to do for myself is I have to normalize these things. So that I accept them, that I don't know if there's a version of my story in the past or in the future that has zero imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So if my goal is to avoid it and it pops up and somehow I failed by it popping up, it's like, no, I'm going to kind of learn to live with that thing.
Yeah.
And then the dark drivers, I love that word, because if we all can accept, we all have some version of that, to whatever degree it is, we then can talk about it as opposed to ignore it or excuse it away. It's like, now let's just have a conversation. Everybody in the room has one. Let's just try to unbury it, uncover it. So as you think through some of this stuff, what are some other things you've had to kind of learn to live with where at some point you were trying to avoid it, ignore it?
Yeah.
Because you work with business owners. And so it's like, this is such a complex group of people.
Sure. Yeah, I fully agree with you that we at some point have to embrace those things. While they are certainly minimized in my life, the dark drivers and the imposter syndrome, they'll never go away. And it could be even more hidden or invisible than I even imagine it is, especially the dark driver, the achievement deal. And I'm going to talk about what still kind of propels me. The imposter syndrome, I don't know, this may surprise you and your audience, I don't know that that's 100% all bad. Every time that I come up to whatever the next level is and that voice is there, I guess it's what you do with it. When that voice is there and says, I don't know if you can play at this next level, this national level, this international level, I take that as a challenge, not as a defeat. It's like, okay. Let's see, what would I work through inquiry and curiosity. So what would it take for me to play at the next level? What do I need to change about myself? So I just answer the imposter with questions and answers to the questions. Jim Collins has a version of this. He calls it productive paranoia. It's a little bit different than the imposter syndrome, but you know, it plays on a parallel track of, you know, there's a little bit of productive paranoia that if I don't if I don't work hard, if I don't continue to grow and change, all this could just go away. It's not guaranteed. So I don't mind wrestling with some of those imposter questions, because if I can come up with really good answers to them, it'll just help me. And I coach myself by questions, and everybody I coach by questions. What are the top five questions you need to ask yourself to move to the next level? That's one of the ways that I coach. What are the top five questions? So, okay. So one of the things I continue to wrestle with is this workaholic high achievement motor. I mean, I'm almost 60, but Stan, I am as passionate and motivated and hungry as I've ever been. And I have to consistently interrogate and making sure that I'm leading a balanced life, because I could work too much. So that's one of the things I have to consistently wrestle with. Am I taking the time, the thinking time, the reading time? Am I truly learning how to rest and relax? Like, that's hard for me. I get bored really easily and I need to work. And so I have to wrestle with how much of that is good and I need to do that creative side, or how much of that is I need to watch out because I drove myself in the ground in my 40s and I have to be careful not to do that.
Did you have people before you did that in your 40s telling you, and you kind of knew and it still happened, or were you just kind of blinders on making it all happen? And, you know,
yeah, I think more blinders on. I'm growing my first company, just leaps and just exploding growth. And this is what I thought leadership was supposed to do. No one ever taught me, right? I'm just making this stuff up as I go along. And I heard about a balanced lifestyle. I mean, I heard about all that, but you know, I'm building this worldwide deal, and I simply wasn't drawing the boundaries that I needed to around more all the time that I spent thinking about it. It just is nonstop. I never allowed my brain, even on my days off, I never allowed my brain to relax. And that more than anything was the problem.
Yeah. As I hear you talk about some of that stuff, I'm thinking there's even the imposter syndrome piece, there's a version of all of us that ignores it, runs away from it. There's a healthier, more experienced version that kind of sits with it, lives with it. Some of the stuff you're saying is like, you've learned to like turn these things into like allies or
teachers
in a way, to where it's like, you're almost pursuing it, being curious of it.
Yeah.
Because it's teaching you faster that way.
100%. I want those things to teach me. Even when I continue to interrogate something from my past, you know, some wrestling match from my past, I want to sit at it and I want it to teach me what I need to change, how I need to be different, how I can use this to mentor all the other leaders that I mentor and transition it that way. So those things have become my teachers, not my enemies.
Wow. So with your business now, as you coach business owners in the U.S., around the world, what's the scope and what is that kind of transformed into?
Yeah, U.S., I don't think we have any international clients. We do some work in Canada, mostly here in the U.S. There's two or three main services we provide. Executive coaching is what you're referring to, and we have a team of seven coaches now. So executive coaching, which is a mixture of the deep dive stuff we're talking about and the accountability stuff of goal setting and intrinsic and extrinsic motivators and, you know, the fairly traditional accountability type coaching of what's stopping you, what's getting in your way, are you prioritizing things? But I'm not interested in just doing that without also addressing mindset and limiting beliefs and imposter syndrome, all the stuff we've been talking about, because, you know, I ran a counseling center for 30 years. So I know those things are there that are keeping us, and we have to unpack some of them. We're not counselors. My team is not counselors, but we need to do some deep dive coaching. So it's a combination of the deep dives, imposter syndrome, productive paranoia, limiting beliefs, as well as, Sten, what do you want to achieve in 2025? Why do you want to achieve that? What are the steps to get there? Let's prioritize those. What do you want to do in Q1, Q2, blah, 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 right? All that stuff. I think those layers are limited. So we do executive coaching. Our big services, the deep dive we do with organizations, our 12-month engine program, that I created. It's proprietary to us, where we go in and do deep dives with all of the six different systems of companies. And then we have Leaders Edge University as well, where companies come to us and they have emerging leaders that have never been fully trained on leadership. They were fantastic widget salesmen, and now they're in charge of the sales team and never led humans before. And those are, yeah, as you well know, those are different skill sets. So we help train leaders through Leaders Edge University. So those are the three main things we do now.
Nice. Yeah, one thing I'm learning now, that there's things that I'm not aware of that if I fast forward in 2 years, I'll be fully aware of.
Yeah.
I get frustrated with that because I'm just like, I know there's something I need to know now that if I did, it would help me. But sure, there's something about I haven't earned it yet to know that, have that knowledge, or to be able to like or understand it to use it yet.
Yeah.
But part of what I've learned now that I look back and I'm like, man, if I just would have known that sooner. Based on my story, what I want is adults that are professionals that just get stuff done. And I'm here to help, but like at the end of the day, go figure it out. A lot of those people start companies. They don't necessarily thrive in like a work environment. And so I'm like, well, I can't have a lot of them because I need people that want to work on a team and be healthy and culture. So there is some responsibility to training people well.
For sure.
Help them be successful. But then I've spent some time overtraining people and kind of not holding them accountable and keeping people on the team too long that shouldn't be here. Oh, and I'm trying to find this balance now between I want motivated, healthy adults that have accountability and own stuff. But then as a company, we do have to have a path, a framework, a culture that helps them thrive more.
Yeah.
What would you say to me in this moment if I was a coaching client where you're like, Sten, here, both of those things are true, but there is a balance?
Yeah. Bro, this is like the magic question, right? I mean, there's no way that I can solve this right here, right now. This is the magic question of every business owner ever that has ever tried to build this staff. Yeah. You don't want entrepreneurs. I mean, you can't hire me. You hire me, I'm going to eventually become a competitor and try to drive you out of business, right? I'm 100% unemployable. So you can't hire guys like me.
Yep.
But you don't want slackers that have to be handheld and babysat every day either. So somewhere in the middle are what the term that we like is intrapreneur. Intrapreneur. They like working on a team. They like serving a greater mission that they may have not have come up with. They are innovators. They a lot of the same characteristics of entrepreneurs, but they like the safety. They're not the cliff jumpers like you and I are. They're not going to jump off the cliff and start something themselves. That's for crazy people.
Yeah.
Like you provide me a good, safe framework and benefits and all that, and I'll give you my best. So that's a person we're looking for sure. That wasn't actually your question. Your question was like, how do we find those people?
Yeah, that's yeah, that's a tough one.
Obviously, incredibly good recruiting, well-structured interviewing, what we call a talent profile when we come into companies. One of the first things we create for their team building system is a talent profile. Exactly. And you did a good job of describing this avatar. Describe for me the perfect person to work at ABC Inc. In any position right now, we're not talking about a seat description yet. In any position, you know, to be for leaders, as you need to be innovative and curious, and have to have really good EQ skills, interpersonal skills, good communicator, have to be able to be fully present in a conversation. So what we call a talent profile and avatar, you know, that's where you begin. And then you create interviewing and hiring processes around that avatar. What are the kind of questions or systems we need to solicit or filter in or out the things we're looking for? And then, you know, you alluded to this earlier. You're absolutely right. Invest in them in a training program. People want mastery, autonomy, purpose. Those are things that drive people. Those are those intrinsic motivators that the vast majority of us as humans desire. So if you can help your people with mastery, helping them build their skill set, most people want to be good at things. Mm-hmm. We want to be autonomous. No one wants to get told what to do all the time. So finding ways where inside that framework, they have voice, they have agency, you know, that's going to scratch that autonomy itch. And then purpose, more than any time in our nation's history, in our world's history, the talent pool wants meaning in their lives at work, and they're looking for workplaces to get it. So consistently conveying, this isn't just about the widgets. These widgets are part of a much bigger thing.
Yeah.
And so leaders like you and I, we have to make sure that we are not just talking about the task. We have to make sure we're talking about the meaningful pursuit of the purpose of ABC Inc.
That's good. Yeah, I'll share with all the listeners that I've gone through the ups and downs of, like, I know I need people, I'm excited about it, to, wow, I get people, these, are there really any good people out there? Maybe I'll just make it small and do it myself. And I think there's value in learning how to attract people, develop them, because you can't accomplish more. I don't think that means all of us need organizations with 100 people, 200 people. Bigger is not always better. Sure. But if you do have a good system for attracting good people and vetting them well, and you have enough respect for the culture and your business to not let people linger that shouldn't. And for me, that was the caretaking was part of my story, was like, Sten gets purpose from just trying to get excited for people and help them accomplish stuff, which isn't a good quality in leaders.
Nope.
You're being nice too much. That if right now you're listening and you're struggling with, like, I just am not good at hiring people. I don't think there's people out there that will be a good fit. I'll tell you, that's not true. But there's a chance you're doing something right now that is sabotaging that. That there needs to be some introspection on, like, it's maybe not the world that's the problem. Like, maybe there's something that I have control over that can get me a better outcome. And then that's what I've been working through.
This is such a refreshing mindset. Let's go back to that victim mentality we talked about 15, 20 minutes ago. I see this in CEOs every day who come to me. This is the number one conversation when people are now asking for our help is, the talent pool doesn't want to work anymore. These Gen Y and Gen Zers, they're so lazy, and they don't have the Gen X and Boomer work ethic and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, they all want to work from home, and they want to work 20 hours a week and get paid $500 an hour. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And they have this victim mentality. So let's talk about that. These generations are this, and the economy is that. And I just, even though I'm from their generation, I have a much different mindset because I work with young leaders like yourself every day. I know that there are people out there, they want to work hard. They want to succeed. They are out there. And so I tell those CEOs, and maybe some of your listeners, it's your leadership. Mm. It's your leadership. It has to adjust. It has to evolve. The leadership of even 10 years ago, pre-COVID, is not working. Certainly the leadership of the 80s and 90s and before that is not going to work with Gen Y and Z. It's just not. They want autonomy. They want purpose. They want meaning. They want voice. They do want flexibility. So we as leaders are the ones that have to evolve. Now that doesn't mean, and so here's what I get. Here's the pushback. So I have to lower my standards to accommodate this, you know, diaper wearing generation. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Stop with that. Sit and listen and try to understand, get curious about what drives them, what motivates them, because it's there. And you'll find that they have big dreams just like you do. They're just different.
Yeah.
And so I tell them, you're the one that has to evolve.
Yeah.
If you don't like change, you're gonna like irrelevancy even less. So
I love that. If you could, as we wrap up, you could, so with all the people that are listening, a lot of business owners, advisors,
sure.
Most advisors I meet with have big goals. They want to accomplish more things.
Great.
They also want some balance in their life.
Of course.
What would you say, but for some reason, most of them don't have coaching. Yeah. Most of them, it's like, I'm just going to kind of figure this out on my own.
Sure.
I'm going to repeat the same mistakes as everybody around me, and we'll all kind of hopefully end up in the same spot. To everybody listening that does not currently pay for coaching,
yeah,
what are you saying? Obviously, this is the world you're in, so you're passionate about it. But what have you learned about people that aren't getting coaching?
Yeah, short answer: it's a big mistake. It's a big mistake to think you know everything, to think your blind spots are not there. By definition, they're called blind spots. To think those things don't exist in you, they exist in everyone else you know, but they don't exist in you, is delusional. And, you know, it's simply not true. So have the humility to realize that you have blind spots you could gain from this. But then look around at every top performer in every field around the world. Look at them. Look at every golfer, every violinist, every singer. Look at every one of them. And I bet 99.9% of them have one or more coaches that will watch their swing and their footwork and work with their vocal scales and all the things, because they see things that that performer doesn't see. Now, they're not performing at that same level. That's not the role of the coach. No. The role of the coach is to get that person to their highest possible selves. So every person that your audience member will look at and say, oh, top performer, they're going to probably have a slew of coaches that's helping them to get there. So be wise. If you want to be a top performer, get some coaching.
Good word. All right, my friend, this was fun. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for the invite. What an honor. What a joy. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great work. Proud of you.
Yeah, I appreciate all the help you're giving us too. Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity or you know somebody that would be potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.